You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 539 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, and a surprise podcast. It is Wednesday night into Thursday morning. I was not going to record. If you heard the last podcast, it was a mailbag show. Went into a number of different topics, but the end of that podcast was me saying basically that I would not be back until next week. But it was a wild game on Wednesday night, and doing me a favor on this fine evening to help me break it down is the great Jeff Siegel. What's up, man?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. I announced on the last show that I was traveling. I have now traveled. It was a nightmare day of travel to the point where I was stuck in an airport for several hours and had some false starts and some delays and just nightmares all around. And it is currently 1:34 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday morning, technically. And I still have not done my normal prep. So the reason, normally I would say to save everybody from the delays and all that fun stuff, I would normally do this podcast by myself, but I didn't watch the game in the way that I normally would. I'll just be honest about that. It was not a double watch, lots of note-taking kind of night for me. I was in transit, missed the game live, did watch a little bit of it after the fact, but I'm bringing Jeff on because Jeff was dialed in, and we'll kind of just breeze through this thing. So, Jeff, if I were to ask you what the big picture takeaway from this game was for you, there are several, I'm sure, but a 131-123 victory for the Hawks in overtime. Seems like a pretty fun game, but at the same time, is there like a big picture takeaway that you have from this one, or is it just a win that the Hawks managed to get here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not something that's super big picture that we're going to look back on a year from now and be like, oh, remember that Wolves game when they all came together? I mean, it's a nice win. It's something that it's a situation where they were down 9 going into the fourth quarter. They had been down, double digits most of the second half after a really, really rough end of the second quarter. It's sort of, from that perspective, it was nice to see the team sort of come together and fight through and get a victory. It was, but it's not something where we're going to look back on it even over the summer and go, oh yeah, that was one of the best wins of the year. I think, the guys who played well. There were a few, guys who played really poorly and I think it worked out for them in the end, but it's not something that I think we're gonna really look back on as a key part of the season or anything like that.
Yeah, I think just, as a log line of this game, the fact that they were able to come back from the deficit that you mentioned, the fourth quarter in overtime, they outscored the Wolves by a 45-28 margin. That's pretty impressive, even at home. The Wolves are not, a fantastic team, but they are a pseudo-playoff contender in the West. They are certainly a better team than the Hawks are. And to come back and do that on a night where they couldn't stop Karl Anthony Towns was good. I mean, it's a very solid win. And honestly, the reason why we're doing this sort of emergency level podcast is because the game was so much fun, and because of the guys who played well being very famous. Trey and John were the guys who kind of carried the weight for most of this game. So I got a lot of Twitter reaction and kind of realized, like, look, this is one of the more exciting games. I'm kind of with you that it doesn't seem like a game that we're going to be, reminiscing upon 2 or 3 years from now. But at the same time, it's probably one of the 5 most exciting games of the season so far. You talk about an overtime win. It had a lot of highlight plays. And in the end, it was Collins and Young kind of doing what Collins and Young did to combine for 70 points. That kind of makes it a very interesting game, even though I'm kind of with you that it wasn't necessarily a game that, memorable may not be the word for it, but it was certainly impressive and buzzworthy, maybe is probably the better way to put it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it was memorable and it was buzzworthy in that the guys who are the future of the team played really well, that Young and Collins obviously were the biggest parts of the team. Kevin Huerter was plus 24 to lead the team in his 31 minutes. So, there's those three guys as you look toward the future are the future of the team. And all three of those guys, two of them obviously played well, really well in the box score. And Huerter was solid in sort of the way that he can be, even if he doesn't quite have it going from the field and elsewhere. But, I think those are the it's one big step in their development as a whole, those three guys in particular. And then it's nice to see the team get a win in a year that there, aren't a ton of wins, even though they've been, better than we expected coming in.
For sure. And I mean, I guess, you know, the plan on this podcast, we're going to go through basically player by player in the way that I normally would by myself, kind of break things down. Before we get into like the player by player stuff, was there a theme, like how did the Hawks win this game? I guess is the easiest way to do it. I know some of that has to do with individual play, but is there an item or two that you sort of latched onto as to why the Hawks were able to get this win, especially make the comeback in the fourth quarter? Because, you know, going into the fourth, as you mentioned, they were down by nine. They had lost all three of the first three quarters. Not terribly. They weren't like in this, you know, massive hole, but they did something in the fourth quarter to close the gap. So was there a big picture, like, takeaway that you had that as to, like, how the Hawks won this game? Was there a key moment? Was there a key stretch for you that kind of swung things? Or was it just the team kind of making enough plays on the stretch?
I mean, I think the one of the biggest things that you can take away from this game just from a macro level is that Minnesota just didn't play very well in the fourth quarter. You know, outside of Towns, nobody was particularly good. You know, I think Andrew Wiggins had a couple of late shots, but like other than that, they didn't get a lot of good contributions from their guys, the guys that they would expect to play well, you know, or even just that they want to play well. Tyus Jones was 0-for-3. Derrick Rose was 1-for-5. You know, it's just those kinds of situations were not great for them. They, you know, 9-for-21 from the field for Minnesota, only 23 points in that fourth quarter. Then they got blitzed out at the beginning of the fourth quarter where they lost. You know, the Hawks opened on a 7-0 run, and it really, you know, it got a little bit closer after Towns had a couple of buckets, but it wasn't, you know, they never got back into a tie ball game, I don't think, or took the lead. So, you know, it's From the fourth quarter, I think that Minnesota just really sputtered offensively. They were unable to get into a lot of what they wanted to do offensively. A lot of that, you know, gets back to Tyus Jones. That's, you know, you wouldn't necessarily say that that's something that the Hawks did well. I think DeAndre Bembry did a good job defensively against Jones. You know, they didn't go with Trae Young against Jones for the most part. They went with They went with Bembry at the point of attack, you know, against Jones, and then later against Derrick Rose, of course, on the final play of regulation. So, you know, I think the Hawks defended well, and then of course they were ridiculous offensively, 8-for-9 from the field for John Collins, and they scored 32 points and were able to push that to overtime. So, you know, I think the main takeaway from the fourth quarter is just that Minnesota probably didn't play all that well, and then, you know, the Hawks were able to get enough buckets to come back.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter and overtime combined, the Wolves shot 11 of 31, which is rough, obviously. You know, the Hawks had something to do with that. They played better defense in the fourth quarter and overtime, but a lot of that is just kind of Minnesota not executing. And you mentioned Collins, who was awesome in the fourth. He had 18 in the fourth quarter by himself, which was huge. I mean, it's not ever one guy that does a win like this, that pulls one off like that, but the fact that he was able to kind of dominate was impressive. And then the overtime belonged to Bembry, which is interesting because he's not the guy that you would point to as an offensive engine, but he led all players actually in overtime with 6 points on three shots and had three rebounds as well. So he was sort of the player in crunch time there, I guess the second crunch time of overtime that made all the plays. So, I mean, it's interesting. Let's just start rolling through players. That probably is the easy way, then we'll kind of jump off from there. Let's start on the bench because the starters were sort of the headliners for the most part and get the guys out of the way that were not great. So we'll save Bembry and Vince for a little bit later. Kent Bazemore had a rough day at the office. I was getting a lot of tweets early on. You know, I'm a vocal proponent of Kent. I think you are as well, at least when compared to the consensus. But this was a rough night at the office for Kent in every way. Basically, he missed all 12 of his shots in 14 minutes, which is jarring, both in that he took 12 shots and that he only played 14 minutes because he was so bad in this game. So what did you see from Kent aside from the fact that he was just not very good?
Yeah, I mean, he was really, really bad. And it wasn't even that he went 0-for-12. It was that there were a lot of just terrible misses on shots that he should be able to make. I mean, certainly over the last couple of games, he's probably missed like 5 open layups. He missed 2 against Houston, and he must have missed at least 2 or 3 again tonight against Minnesota. Like it was, he's just in a funk in terms of finishing around the rim right now, just over these last couple of games. And then that sort of extended in this game to all parts of his game. And he was really, you could tell he was unhappy with the way he was playing. Obviously, he picked up another technical foul. I think that's his 12th of the year so far. So, you know, he's right up there with the leaders in technical fouls this year. Didn't play particularly well. Was not was not necessarily a big part of what they were doing defensively, because Minnesota doesn't have somebody that he can really match up with. And you know, Andrew Wiggins didn't have a great game, but I don't think that that had a lot to do with Bazemore. I think that was more of a DeAndre Bembry thing, who obviously played a ton of minutes because Bazemore was so bad and Bembry played well. We'll get back to him a little bit later. But Bazemore just... it was one of those days at the office where, like you said, he just was not particularly effective in pretty much anything he was doing.
Yeah, if you're trying to find a bright spot for Bazemore, it was that he had 4 assists in 14 minutes. But other than that, 5 rebounds was, I guess, pretty solid. But minus 19, and again, you won by 8 points. Granted, it was an overtime game, so I guess it was more of a net neutral game through 4 quarters. But still, minus 19 in 14 minutes is jarring. And he earned that one, honestly. Sometimes plus minuses can be deceiving in a one-game sample size, but that one was actually kind of spot on. It was the worst one on the Hawks and on either team, actually, as I'm looking at this now. So a rough night for Kent. It doesn't mean that he's bad now. That's worth pointing out, but it was not a good and memorable night for Bazemore. Elsewhere, the three guys who played single-digit minutes, Alex Lynn, Jalen Adams, and Jordan Seibert. I wanted to ask you about Jordan Seibert because this is, of course, the first time he's ever played for the Hawks. He played 4 minutes. He actually came in before Adams, which I thought was interesting in some ways. But what did you see from him in that brief time period? I think for me it was more like, let's just try Jordan Seibert because he's around. You don't want to just go through an entire 10-day contract without playing a guy. But beyond that, did he show you anything that you like to see?
Not particularly. I mean, he made the one open three that he got, which was nice.
That's his game.
That's literally his entire game. So that's good. I mean, it's nice that he hit it. It's better than not hitting it. Certainly those 3 points mattered coming down the end when it was a tie game going into overtime. So a 3 pointer in the first quarter didn't swing the game, but 3 points is 3 points. And so, it was good for him to knock down that shot. You referenced that he came in ahead of Adams. That doesn't mean he was the backup point guard. They went with DeAndre Bembry as the backup point guard for those minutes, and Seibert just played off the ball, just was able to knock down the 1-3 he got. Other than that, did nothing else on the floor of any real note. Was not, didn't kill them defensively, but wasn't fantastic either. You don't expect him to be all that good defensively, frankly. And so, he was fine. It was not something that... I think the concept of just get him out there just to see what he can possibly do is probably correct. He signed, his 10-day contract a week ago. It's going to come up, he's going to expire, either later this week or over the weekend. So, it's something where I think they were just sort of seeing what they could get out of him before that expires and before they get BJ Johnson in there to sort of take that spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth a look at him, but, you could... And I guess there's still some uncertainty as to whether they're going to be keeping Seibert for a second 10-day. They don't have to cut him. They don't have to necessarily let him go because they have a 15th spot. They want to sign BJ Johnson. But without getting too deep into that, at least he played. It was good to see him on the floor at least once because I was kind of starting to feel bad for him that he was going to get through that whole 10 days and never play. So he at least played in this game. So shouts to Jordan Seibert. Other two guys, Lynn and Adams. I mean, Adams is interesting that he didn't play very much here. Not that it's a surprise necessarily, but he was really bad Monday night against Houston. He was really kind of unplayably bad. Tonight, minus eight in 5 minutes does not make him look great. Was he better than Monday? I mean, that's kind of the only thing that, because Monday was kind of a disaster. Was it like as noticeable in this game that he was really killing the Hawks, or was that minus eight just kind of circumstantial?
No, it was pretty much the same kind of thing. He was not good. Through the first 2 minutes, he was minus 11. So I guess the next 3 minutes were better. That's nice. But he was really like the offensive drop off when Young leaves the floor for Adams in particular is just so huge. It's something that, we've talked about sort of the depth issues on this team before, and coming into the year, the power forward spot was the big one where, Collins at the top was solid. We didn't know how good Collins was obviously going to be in the summer, but he's been very good. And the drop off to Spellman and Vince Carter, we expected to be bad, has been bad at times. Obviously it's, certain days it's been better than others. The drop off from Young to Adams, who is essentially the only other point guard on the roster at this point, that's bigger than Collins to anybody else on the team in terms of the power forward spot. So, the point guard is the new spot to look at in terms of if they could upgrade the backup point guard spot, they'd be a lot better. They got away with it in this game because Trey played all but 10 minutes of the game. He played 43. And so, you know, they got away with it with a little bit of Adams and a little bit of Embry, and that's how they sort of made it work. But the Adams minutes have been really difficult to watch. He's not, you know, he can shoot, but that's about it. And so if you want him to be, you know, your backup point guard and sort of run the offense a little bit, he's just not totally capable of that. And if you have, you know, other guys around him who can take away some of that playmaking responsibility, you play him with a Kevin Huerter, you know, Bembry, Bazemore even has a little bit of playmaking in his game, especially, you know, you saw that with the four assists in 14 minutes, even though he couldn't do anything else. You know, you can get away from that, but I think sometimes the Hawks will put him in there as the point guard, and he's just not really capable of that at an NBA level right now. And so if they wanted to move him off the ball a little bit more, put the ball in Bembry's hand, Bazemore, even Prince, Huerter, you know, those guys, that makes a little bit more sense. That would help him a little bit more. And then, of course, you know, defensively, he's maybe worse than Trey. He's probably just as bad. The two of them are two of the worst of, you know, defensive point guards in the league. So I don't know what they're really looking for from him as an NBA player. I don't think that there's a whole lot there. You know, we'll see if they can move him off the ball a little bit more. Maybe that'll help him. But at this point, it seems unlikely that he's going to be an NBA player long term, which is unfortunate, I guess, for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to pile on Adams, but I agree with most of what you're saying there. It's not, it's kind of unfair to him that he's being asked to do this right now. That's the one counterpoint, is just like, I think it's like kind of widely known that he's not ready to play right now, but he has to play, quote unquote, because they don't have anybody else. So tough spot for Jalen. We'll see if he can improve if they keep playing him. And I think they pretty much have to. So we'll see how that looks down the stretch of the season. All right. The three guys who played a little bit more off the bench that we haven't talked about yet were Amari Spellman and then Bembry and Carter. Spellman was the one who didn't necessarily stand out to me necessarily. You know, 6.7 rebounds, not too bad. 3 assists, has some decent numbers there, but was actually minus 18. He and Bazemore were the ones that kind of had the big time minuses, plus minus wise. Spellman seemed to be better than Bazemore was, obviously, in this game. But what did you see from Amari?
I mean, I think Amari was just sort of overmatched with Karl Anthony Towns a little bit. Like, I think that's part of
a lot of people what, are, by the way.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. Like, that's not a criticism. I mean, obviously, it's not a good thing, but it's not like that's going to impact the way we think about Amari Spellman. Like, things often go poorly when you're trying to guard Karl Anthony Towns. The fact that, and we'll get back to this, I think, a little bit later, the fact that Collins didn't get killed by Towns is probably encouraging, at least from that perspective. But, you know, going back to Spellman, you know, I think he was fine. He, you know, got in on the offensive glass a little bit more than you sort of expect from him. But he's, you know, he continues to flash some more athleticism than he looks, if that makes sense. Like, he's admitted that he's overweight, but he's an athletic guy for as overweight as he is. So, like, you can see him getting in on the glass a little bit. You can see him banging with guys a little bit more than you would sort of expect him to. And so, you know, there's still stuff to like about Spellman. This was not one of his better games, but, you know, I think he just was sort of overmatched by Towns in this game. And it's just sort of the way it worked out, the minutes that he played, you know, a lot with the second unit. He played a lot with, you know, with Adams and with the Seibert minutes as well. And so, you know, he got killed in those minutes, and those minutes might not necessarily be his fault that they got killed. And so that just sort of all added up to his plus minus being sort of negative, you know, even just in the overtime. I think the Hawks blitzed out to that 7-0 run. Then they took Collins out for a couple minutes just to give him a quick rest.
He was gassed.
Spellman came, yeah. Yeah, Spellman came in. Towns went on a quick 5-0 run against Spellman. That is mostly Spellman's fault. Got a dunk on the roll and then got a pick and pop three. And then Collins came back in and they closed out the game. And so that's a minus five in the overtime that they won by eight. And that's just, you know, sort of unfortunate timing for Spellman. Obviously, those 5 points were more his fault, but I don't think necessarily that I wouldn't say that the minus 18 and, you know, second worst player on the team by plus minus is really all that indicative of how he played specifically.
Yeah, and it's good to put that stuff in context a little bit here. The positive guys, though, off the bench were Bembry, who we talked about a little bit before, but I want to spend more time on, and then Vince Carter. Let's go to Vince first, because Vincent had some defensive moments in this game, which was not what he's been known for this season. He turned it up a little bit defensively, hit three threes as well. 17 points, four assists from Carter, and a plus 21, which is the best on the bench and second best in the entire team. A very good Vince Carter game. He's not always been, you know, it's been a little bit up and down at times for Vince this year, but he was dialed in this game, it felt like, and that is a very useful piece considering his offense.
Yeah, I mean, when he's dialed in like this, he's just, you know, it's, you wonder if he's actually going to retire at the end of the year. You know, it's one of those kind of situations.
And by the way, he may not. He's kind of gone out of his way to not say that he's retiring. And in fact, he's kind of pushed back against that, like, more than anybody that's on this retirement tour. Like, he's definitely not going to say he's retiring because he really may not. Like, he doesn't seem like a guy, at least to me and being around the team, as someone who is definitely retiring. He's keeping the option open and not just saying that. Like, I think Dirk hasn't said it either, but everyone kind of thinks Dirk's going to retire. Vince is someone who would not surprise me if he came back, honestly. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy to say because given his age, but he may not be going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and you sort of saw that with the All-Star game, and then they opened up those two extra spots for Dirk and Wade, and that there wasn't any even talk about Vince Carter. Like, it was almost as if the commissioner's office and the league sort of have an inkling that, like, we'll be able to do this for Vince next year, so we can hold off this year. You know, making three spots would have been a little bit weird just because two of them would have had to be on the same team. But, you know, it's just the fact that they didn't open up a spot for him and the fact that there was no real conversation about opening a spot for him, you know, when he is just as much a first ballot Hall of Famer as those guys, even though he doesn't have the championship pedigree, you know, just because of his impact on the game, his impact on the game in Toronto, just in general, he's obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer. So, but getting back to this game in particular, you know, this was good Vince. This was as good a Vince as we've seen all year. This was probably one, maybe just as good as the game against the Lakers back in November when he took the mantle and guarded LeBron down the stretch and brought the Hawks back into that game defensively. He was doing a lot of the same stuff against the Wolves tonight. He didn't guard Karl Anthony Towns on, you know, most of the possessions, but when he did, he was very good against Towns, and he was very good at blowing up what Minnesota wanted to do. Nothing, you know, nowhere was that more obvious than on the very last play of regulation where, you know, they wanted to go with a Rose Towns pick and roll. They went to Rose against Bembry, and Towns came up to set the ball screen, and Carter just basically, like, chucked him out of the way. And Bembry was allowed to sort of navigate under the screen twice, and then Rose threw up a floater from the elbow that didn't even hit the rim. And, like, that was made because – or that, you know, he was able to defend that – Bembry was able to defend that shot because Carter was able to push Towns out of the way and get him sort of – in a place where he was not able to set a good screen. And so I think, you know, those are the sorts of moments from Carter that are really solid. That's why they have him around. That's why they want him on the team. And that's why he's, you know, able to play, you know, 20 minutes a game sometimes even when he is not necessarily high in the pecking order of, in terms of, you know, where the team is going in the future, he's able to bring it right now. And that's, you know, a big part of their team right now.
For sure, you know, and Vince gets in a timeshare every once in a while. He had one of those rim attacks where it looks like he's, you know, 30 again or 27 again or whatever, and it gets fun in a hurry. And, you know, Vince is a lot of fun to cover, I'll be honest with you. There are games when he's not fantastic, but this is one of those games where it's like, oh, he could still play, and it was fun. He definitely was a big part of them getting this win, honestly. Okay, I'm going to save Bembry for just one moment. I want to take a second and remind everybody to subscribe to the podcast and be a, you know, Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or TuneIn Radio, Spotify, wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We should be there. If we're not there, please let me know that. And also check out the entire Locked On Podcast Network. We will come back in a moment after this short break and finish up talking about the game on Wednesday. All right, Jeff, we're back. And yeah, let's get to Bembry because he had obviously the overtime was kind of the biggest moment for him, but his numbers are great in this game. 16 points, 14 rebounds, second most in the entire game, behind only Towns, and led the Hawks in rebounding, which is not something that he normally does. He's a fine rebounder, but not an elite one by any means. Efficiently, he scored as well, so plus one, 34 minutes. He played starter-level minutes, played more than Herter did, played more than Prince did, played more than Mazemore, obviously. What did you see from Bembry? Because it's always nice to see him kind of get dialed in. There's always frustrating moments with him offensively, but this entire package was obviously a pretty good one for him.
Yeah, this was one of his better games of his career. I think he played, you know, extremely well in terms of doing all of the things that Pierce told us that he could do before the season. I mean, when we were talking to Pierce at the beginning of the year, the biggest thing about Bembry was he's the only guy on this team who can just get to the rim whenever he wants. He doesn't need a screen. He doesn't need anything. He can go past pretty much anybody in the league. He's got enough of a handle, even though his handle is not as good as I sort of would like it to be. He's able to get to the rim anytime he wants, and that's what showed up in the biggest way offensively in this game for him. He was just able to blow by whoever was guarding him, especially in the overtime and down the end of the fourth quarter. He was able to just do whatever he wanted, and so it was, you know, that was the biggest thing for me in terms of taking away, you know, big things for Bembry in this game, is that he got that confidence back of just barreling into the rim. He, you know, had the third most shot attempts on the team overall because he was able to get it going in the overtime period. And so, you know, I think he played really well. You know, the rebounding was interesting. Obviously, he got in a little bit on the offensive glass, but he got 10 defensive rebounds. A lot of that came, you know, and we're going to get back to Collins in a second here. A lot of that did come when, you know, the Hawks did a decent job boxing out Karl Anthony Towns. Towns did end up with 5 offensive rebounds, but like overall, he was in there on a lot of those missed shots, and they did a decent job of boxing him out, which meant that other guys were able to swoop in and grab rebounds. Obviously, Trae Young had 7. Kevin Huerter had 5 defensive rebounds. Torian Prince had 3. You know, even Bazemore had 3 in his few minutes. You know, I think they, you know, and obviously Bembry had 10. That sort of gets back to a lot of what they were trying to do on the defensive glass as a team. They were focused on boxing out Towns and letting the other guys get in on the glass, and Bembry and Young in particular were very good at taking advantage of that.
Yeah, that proved to be very effective as well, because as a team, the Hawks rebounded 83.9% on the defensive glass. That is an excellent rate. Just for people that don't know that, that's an awesome rate. So they were able to keep a good, you know, obviously Towns by himself is kind of a factor there, but just closing possessions was huge. You know, the Wolves shot the ball okay. They only turned it over 7 times, so it wasn't like they were bad on offense, but the fact that the Hawks were able to close possessions effectively on the defensive glass was huge and helping them get this win. So that kind of was a team-wide effort. Bembry was a part of that, but it's good that we point out, like, kind of the balance there, because a lot of guys were good on the glass tonight, and that sort of starts with Collins. We'll get to it in a moment. You know, Bembry was good. I will say we could sort of breeze through the 3 starters that weren't necessarily huge factors here. I want to talk about Deadman a little bit, because he had an interesting game. 19 minutes, I thought he played well, but 6 fouls. He fouls out in 19 minutes. That's pretty crazy. Had 10 rebounds, which is kind of insane in 19 minutes, 7 points. I thought, you know, is that accurate to say that I think he played well? He just couldn't stop fouling.
Yeah, he played extremely well, and he literally just couldn't keep his hands to himself. But other than that, he was great. Like, he knocked down the only 3 he took. He grabbed a bunch of rebounds. He, you know, got in on the offensive glass a little bit. You know, he even had 3 assists and no turnovers. Like, he was playing really well, and he just could not stop fouling. And Collins, you know, ended up with 4 fouls, had a little bit of foul trouble into the fourth quarter. Like, he, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is really good at basketball. Like, that's just the way it is. And he drew a ton of fouls, and you know, Deadman was the main sort of culprit in terms of picking up those fouls against Towns. And then, you know, Collins ended up picking up a few as well. And, you know, it's just sort of the way it goes sometimes with when you're guarding a guy who's as good as Towns is. And Deadman is not, you know, he's not necessarily the most foul prone guy in the league, but he gets himself into foul trouble, especially recently. He's, you know, had some foul issues. And so this was sort of that on steroids in terms of, you know, he picked up 2 in the first 3 minutes and, you know, obviously picked up all 6 in 19. And so, you know, it was a rough game from that perspective, but literally everything else was good. You know, he knocked down his shots. He got in on the glass really well. He had a few assists. Like, he played really well other than the fouls. And so it's, you know, is he going to foul like that all the time? Probably not. Is he going to play as well as he did all the time? Probably not as well, but more often he's going to play like he did outside of the fouling tonight than he will, you know, take 6 fouls in 19 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. Just real quickly here, did you think Towns got a friendly whistle? Because a lot of people were tweeting at me and tweeting at us, frustrated by the fact that Towns didn't foul out until the end. He finally did foul out, but he had 5 fouls for a long time and didn't foul out. And it felt like maybe, at least in the minds of Hawks fans, you know, it's, you know, kind of, I want to ask you as like an objective party, did you think that Towns got a friendly whistle? Part of that goes with Deadman, but, you know, Was it noteworthy to you, or is that just fans kind of pointing stuff out that isn't really there?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't feel that in the moment. I didn't feel that when I rewatched it as well. Like it didn't feel like Towns drew a ton of sort of BS fouls. It didn't seem like he got away with fouling when he maybe there were one or two here and there, but like nothing that you would say were super egregious in that respect.
I don't think there was like an arm bar that people were tweeting me about that was I think late in the fourth quarter that he wasn't called for, like little stuff like that. I mean, it's going to happen in the NBA, and I think guy who's their best player, you probably don't want, officials are certainly prone to not wanting to foul the best player out. So once you have five, you get a little bit more leeway almost always. So I'm sure there was something there potentially, but okay, I just want to see where we kind of were on that because it's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, Towns drew 10 fouls, but Trae Young drew 11. So it's not like there was, it wasn't like it was overly skewed toward Towns. Towns was getting hit on the block all the time. Like every time he got the ball, he was getting hit, and Trae Young got hit a lot because he was, going to the rim quite a bit, and we'll get to that in a second. But it's not, I wouldn't say that there was, necessarily a particularly bad whistle one way or the other in this game.
All right, I had to ask. So we can move off of that quickly here. The two starting wings in this game, and the Hawks did go back to the lineup with Herter and Prince starting together, which I don't love as a pairing, but I guess it worked in this game, even though either one of those guys were not fantastic. You mentioned Herter didn't have a great stat game. 6 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists for Kevin, and 2 of 9 shooting. Prince was also 2 of 9 shooting, so they combined to be 4 of 18. That's not great, and also 2 of 8 from three, so it wasn't like those two guys were efficient in any way, but they were plus 24 for Herter, plus 15 for Prince. Did those guys play okay, or was it just a scenario where they were on the floor with Collins and Young and they kind of got carried by those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were on the floor when things went well, and so they got a bunch of, they racked up the plus minus. I don't think that they necessarily, had a big part in what they were doing and what the Hawks were doing, but the 2 for 9 for each guy does sort of undersell how well they were playing offensively in terms of just keeping the ball moving, in terms of keeping the Hawks in their offense. The fact that each guy ended up with 3 assists despite sharing the floor a ton with Trae Young sort of shows how the ball was pinging around a lot. Obviously Deadman ended up with 3 assists as well. The ball moved really well in this game for the team as a whole, and I think Trae obviously is a big part of that, but the fact that Prince and Herter both got in on the assist game a little bit shows that they were all keeping the ball moving. Herter, you sort of expect that from him. He is that secondary creator in the starting unit. Prince, you don't necessarily expect that from sometimes. He can get a little shot happy. And, the fact that he was driving and kicking, driving and finding little openings for guys either cutting behind him or cutting in front of him, a lot of that a lot of that was good stuff from Taurean Prince. I didn't think that he, necessarily played all that poorly offensively. Certainly there were stretches where he sort of floated through the game a little bit, but that's going to happen when you're sort of the third option on the wing, maybe even the fourth option behind Herter, and obviously, Young and Collins being the big two. So, I think both of those guys were certainly boosted plus minus wise by the fact that they played with the starters for most of the game, but also that they didn't take as much off the table as 4 for 18 combined would sort of indicate.
Yeah, and that makes sense on a number of levels. Okay, we can get to the main event now. Let's start with Young and save Collins for the end. I'm not really sure why I just decided to do that. Let's do that. Young was, again, fantastic in this game. 36 points. To tie his career high, which is crazy because he set it on Monday and then tied it on Wednesday. And in fact, he missed a free throw at the end. It was his first miss of the game. He was 16 of 16, and then he missed a free throw. That's pretty crazy. To not break his own scoring record, but 36, 10, and 8 rebounds, which is impressive as well. 9 of 22 from the floor. Got to the line 17 times. He's been getting to the line a ton, which I wanted to ask you about, and we sort of mentioned a little bit earlier. But what did you see from Young overall? Obviously, he was very good offensively, but the foul drawing is interesting to me. And obviously, the fact that he keeps shooting the ball well wasn't quite as much about his jump shot in this game as it was in the previous game, where he just shot the lights out on Monday. But it was a very different game, which is also kind of encouraging because it wasn't just the exact same replica of Monday. It was different and also very effective.
Yeah, and in this particular game is way more sort of replicable on a game-by-game basis than how he performed against Houston. He was just on fire against Houston. He couldn't miss anything from beyond the arc. He, made eight of his shots from out there. Like, that's just that's how he was able to do what he did on Monday against the Rockets. This game is a lot more sort of you can see him consistently doing this more often than you can see him consistently hitting eight threes in a game, where he was able to just turn the corner in pick and roll, get downhill, get fouled a ton, you know, find the right, you know, right, the right passes when he did get into the paint and he wasn't getting fouled or wasn't able to finish. You know, 9 for 22 from the field isn't fantastic, but, you know, he was able to get fouled so much that he was able to, you know, put up those points anyway. And then, you know, of course, the 10 assists. So, you know, I think this is probably his best all-around game of his career so far, in that he was able to score, facilitate, he even got in on the glass, like you said. I think, you know, just like Bembry picking up 10 defensive rebounds, like we just talked about, the fact that they were so sort of focused on boxing out Towns gave everybody else on the team an avenue to grab the rebounds. And even though, you know, so I don't think that Trey particularly grabbed a bunch of like contested rebounds. I think, you know, but he was in the mix on the rebounds and he was, you know, able to pick up some of those. I think it's not necessarily, I wouldn't go nuts over the rebounding. I would go nuts over the scoring and assisting and the way he was able to get those points.
For sure. And just for some reference points here, you know, he's only cracked double digits in free throw attempts in 3 games in his career. And 2 of those have been in the last 5 days. So he's getting to the line more. And by the way, this is a career high in free throw attempts and makes, tied for a career high in points. It was the second most he's ever had in rebounds with 8. He's only had 10 once. Minutes, career high, 43. So like, it's not like we're going overboard here and talking about how this might be the best game of his career. He set a bunch of career highs and it didn't feel fluky, which is the good. It's just the best thing about that, because I'm with you about Monday. Like, he, you know, there will certainly be games where Trey makes 8 threes. He's capable of that, which is a very good thing in the grand scheme. But you're not going to make 8 threes all that often. So, you know, doing what he did here, getting to the line 17 times, that isn't probably going to happen all that often. But getting to the line 10, 12 times is possible on a regular basis for Young. And he was just efficient and creative. And he didn't have it going from 3 and still got where he wanted to get, kind of did what he needed to do. So, you know, defensively, there's always going to be some problems, but Young's offense was huge in this game. And I think people are going a little bit overboard recently and like thinking that this is now the new Trae Young that's going to have 30 points in 3 of the last 4 games. He's not quite there yet, I don't think, in terms of just a normal baseline. But, you know, the last, looking at it now, in February, his assist totals 9, 8, 10, 5, 11, 7, 14, 11, 10, 10, 8, 8, and 10. Like, that's sustainable, because this passing is ridiculous. So if you throw that in there with the way that he's beginning to score, it is a scary proposition. Like, I'm one that definitely likes to dampen down expectations, because I think people get overboard pretty easily on a lot of things. But this whole stretch from Young has been fun and very encouraging.
And I think the one big thing to sort of note between the performance on Monday and the performance on Wednesday is that the performance on Monday informs the performance on Wednesday. When a team sees Trae Young made 8 threes in a game, every time he comes around pick and roll, they're further up. Yep. They have to trap. They have to get out there, and that just opens up driving lanes for him. That opens up passing lanes to his teammates. So it's not necessarily one or the other. It's not that he needs to get to 15, you know, free throw attempts a game and eschew three point shooting. I think one informs the other. The other informs, you know, everything sort of is a. Sort of informs the other. It's a sort of a symbiotic relationship in that way, that when he can shoot, it opens up driving lanes. When he can drive to the basket and get fouled, that, you know, makes defenders nervous about trapping out on him, so they drop back so that he can, you know, get that open shot. All of what he does opens up passing lanes for his teammates, which he is obviously, you know, very, very, very good at exploiting. So everything offensively is going about as well as you could have ever expected for Young, especially over the last, you know, 15, 20, 30 games, even, you know, dating back to mid-December, when this sort of streak started where they went 10 and 10 over 20 games. And, you know, they started getting a little bit friskier. Like, he's like 58% true shooting, I think, since mid-December. Like, he's doing, you know, the sort of high efficiency, high usage thing that they wanted out of their lead guard. This is what they envisioned when they drafted him, and I don't think they necessarily envisioned it happening this soon, but it's happening, and it's happening over a very sort of sustained, you know, portion of the season, to the point where you don't expect, you know, 36, 8, and 10 as the baseline, but you can expect this level of sort of shooting on one night, free throw shooting on the other night, passing every night. Like, you can sort of start to expect that as a sort of the baseline expectation for Young at this point.
Yep, he's been awesome and can't be overstated, to be honest with you. He's been very, very good and very, very fun. And it's good to see, you know, fans are getting fired up and you can't blame him because he's been that good and that fun. All right, let's end with Collins. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the way that he had to deal with Towns, but just to throw out his numbers here, you know, it's going to be overshadowed because Young's getting a lot of headlines now with good reason. But Collins was awesome in this game too: 34 points, 8 rebounds, and 13 and 21 from the floor, 2 of 4 from three, and made all 6 of his free throw attempts. You know, the 18 points in the fourth quarter cannot be overstated as well. Like, that was huge, and getting the Hawks to overtime, because if he doesn't do that, they don't make it to overtime. But what'd you see from Collins, you know, offensively, defensively, on the glass, et cetera, sort of big picture? But because obviously he was good here, but how good was he?
He was quite good. He was very, like, this, I don't think necessarily that this is, you know, the best game of his career. He's had some more efficient offensive nights. You know, the fact that he shot the ball 21 times plus 6 free throw attempts, so, you know, about 24 shooting possessions. Still 34 points on 24 shooting possessions is very, very good. He's had those games where he's, you know, 11 for 12 and he scores 30 points on 11 for 12. And, like, those are the offensive nights that you would think about as sort of the best games of his career. But, you know, even just defensively, the way he was able to keep Towns off the glass, which seems odd that I keep coming back to keeping Towns off the glass when he had 5 offensive rebounds and 18 total rebounds and had 37 points and on 19 shots. Like, Towns played super, super well. And Collins, he acquitted himself about as well as you could expect given what Collins' sort of skill set is at this point. You know, I think that he was better defensively than I would have expected coming in, even though Towns, you know, got his and really went off. In general, I think Collins did a pretty good job against him, you know, was able to do a good job on the defensive glass, especially, and sort of open up those rebounds for his teammates. He was able to box out really well. You know, I think those are sort of the big picture keys that you would look for from Collins, not necessarily that the scoring was really solid and that, you know, even the rebounding wasn't as solid for him individually, but the rebounding as a whole was very good. The rebounding, you know, as a whole for Trae Young, for Kevin Huerter, for DeAndre Bembry, those things don't happen without Collins, you know, getting in on the glass and boxing out Towns. And so I think, you know, rebounding is a team effort. It's not unlike defense or offense in the way that you can have a superstar who can just sort of vacuum up rebounds, or you can do it as a team. And this was a more of a team effort, I think. And Collins was a big part of that in terms of the way he was sort of selflessly boxing out Towns and sacrificing his own numbers for the betterment of the team.
For sure, and I mean, this kind of goes into it a little bit, but if you told me before this game started that the Hawks would only shoot, you know, 43% from the floor and defend decently but not incredibly, they'd probably lose more often than not. They shot the ball well from three-point range, which is huge, but they also got 18 offensive rebounds, and that's not all Collins either. He's obviously accompanied by other guys, but he attracts a lot of attention on the offensive glass. A lot. So I think it's one of those things where you've seen, and I think even Pierce has talked about this a couple of times now, Collins' rebounding numbers are down individually over the last month or so. Part of that is that he's being game planned for on the glass, which is not something that people would normally talk about, but teams are now, you know, sending 2 guys at him on the offensive glass, like to keep him away from the glass, et cetera. And he's attracting a lot of attention, opens up a lot of lanes. So rebounding is a tricky thing. You know, you obviously want guys to grab their own rebounds at times, but it's all about team stuff, as you mentioned. And the Hawks were great on the glass on both ends. He had 32% offensive rebound rate. That's very, very good. 84% defensive rebound rate. That's very good. And that's kind of how you were able to win this game, despite not shooting the ball particularly well. And, you know, the turnovers were pretty good as well. 12 turnovers for the Hawks in an overtime game is awesome for Atlanta this season, when they, you know, normally I would tell you that they probably are going to have 20 in a 53-minute game. So that's good too. So creating extra possessions was huge, because they didn't have, you know, aside from Collins, and Collins was efficient and Vince Carter was pretty efficient too, but everybody else didn't shoot great. You know, even Trae was 9 of 22 from the floor. He got to the line a ton. But if you just go down, and if I just showed you the shooting numbers from the Hawks, you know, outside of the free throw line, no one would have been blown away. But when you sort of create extra possessions and extra opportunities on the glass and not turning the ball over, it goes a long way.
Yeah, and of course the free throw shooting was the biggest part of this game for Trae. And so, you know, that's where he brought his value. And obviously, you know, the 9-for-22 was not great from the field. The overall shooting numbers were worse than what Minnesota shot from the field, but they were able to make their threes when they had them. They shot fewer threes than the Wolves. They only shot 29 threes, which is sort of curious, but gets back to the fact that Minnesota was pushing out on the perimeter to run guys off the three-point line, to run Trae Young off the three-point line when he was, you know, turning the corner and pick and roll. That opened up the lane. That opened up, you know, opportunities for DeAndre Bembry to drive, opened up lanes for Kevin Huerter to drive on the you know, specifically on the first play of overtime where he, you know, drove and found Carter for the three. Trae Young obviously was able to drive and get to the rim and get fouled a ton. So, you know, it's sort of a combination of all of those things. You know, what you said about Collins being game planned for on the glass is really interesting. It's similar a little bit to what they were doing on the other end with Karl Anthony Towns. They were doing the best they could to get Towns off of the offensive glass, and it worked for the most part, other than, you know, the five that he picked up. But, you know, it worked for the most part, and they were able to pick up a ton of those defensive rebounds. It's the same sort of thing with Collins on the offensive glass. If he's there, they're, you know, the other teams are sending two guys at him. That opens up a lot of opportunities. You know, Dwayne Dedman picked up three in his 19 minutes. You know, Spellman picked up five of his own. Bembry was able to get out there for four. So, you know, those offensive rebounds are not necessarily, you know, Collins only picked up one, but his presence, you know, elevates their offensive rebounding rate, obviously, in a huge way.
To be sure, and I'm not sure if you can hear this, but this is kind of hilarious. I'm not being vacuumed out of this room, essentially.
Yes, we can hear that.
Which is very, very funny. So that's probably a good time to remind everyone that it's 2:20 where I am in a hotel lobby. And my apologies for the background noise, but that's probably enough. This is, I think, the longest game recap we've ever done on this podcast, because that's what happens when you and I get together, Jeff. Any grand takeaways that we haven't mentioned, or have we said enough after 45 or so minutes?
I mean, I think the biggest takeaway if you want to take something away long term, is that Trae showing that he can really impact the game from a scoring perspective when he doesn't necessarily shoot a bunch of threes. That's really nice to see from his long term development perspective. The fact that he was able to sort of get in internal, you know, inside the paint and get fouled a ton, that's really good. That's more replicable than, you know, if he had a great shooting performance or even a great finishing performance, because at his size, he's not necessarily going to be the, you know, a high-end finisher. If he can be, that's great. But if he is getting in the paint and getting fouled more often than he's even trying to attempt some of those internal shots, that's also, you know, that's going to make him even more efficient than if he was, you know, even a high-end finisher.
Yep, I totally agree. And you know, in the end, a fun night for the Hawks. You know, a lot of Hawks fans were excited, and then with good reason. It was a good win for Atlanta, beating a team that, you know, again, has had a better record and was playing very well recently in the Wolves. So a sort of a memorable one in some ways. It's just one of those things where I wanted to break in, get back, and sort of do an emergency level podcast. And I was appreciative of Jeff, who is, of course, 3 hours behind me. So it's not that late for you. But I still appreciate you hanging out this late and joining me, sir. So I appreciate that. Please plug yourself, since you are everywhere on the internet, and tell people where they can find your work.
You can find me on Twitter at JG Siegel. You can find Hawk Stuff at Peachtree Hoops, which, if you're not reading that, I don't really know what you're doing. If you've listened to this podcast and you don't read Peachtree Hoops, that's just kind of weird. But whatever, if you don't, then Peachtree Hoops is
you should try if you don't already. Please go ahead and join us.
Yeah, you can. If you like to read, best Hawk Stuff on the internet. So we've got you covered on pretty much everything surrounding the team there. I write about the Blazers at Blazers Edge. I write about the rest of the league for Dime. I write about cap stuff for Forbes, and I write about cap stuff for my own website, Early Bird Rights, where you can find salary cap information, draft pick information, all sorts of goodies over there. More stuff coming as we move into the new league year in July. There will be one more place that I can announce later on that the first piece hasn't gone up yet, but it's been filed. So that will go up soon. So, you know, I'm just sort of all over the place, and you can find all of it over at JG Siegel on Twitter.
Follow Jeff. He's the best in the business, and I'm trying to avoid the vacuum cleaner, but that's probably enough content on this fine evening. Hopefully everyone appreciated us jumping on here and getting creative to get this podcast done. I am going to sleep for at least a couple hours, but thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please follow Jeff. Follow myself if you'd like to, at BT Roland on Twitter. And this time I mean it. I will not be back probably unless something crazy happens until at least Sunday night. So please stay tuned for that.